Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
In today's podcast, we explore changing careers and how that can help you change countries. A very big move, either of those, for anyone. And to step into the world of community development and community engagement is certainly rewarding, but having it done from a degree in contemporary dance is interesting. So I'm looking forward to finding out from Becky Hurst, who's my guest today, how she did that, what brought her to Australia from the UK to a successful consulting business, Becky Hurst Consulting. Welcome, Becky.
Thank you for having me. What an introduction.
Pleasure. Well, you gave me some good information. So I'm very keen, firstly, let's just deal with you're in the UK and you're doing a degree in contemporary dance.
I am, yeah.
What led you to community development? Please tell me you practiced in a community hall.
I did.
Oh, there you are.
That's the funny link. It was the 90s. I had always danced through my childhood. I'd studied performing arts. When it came to choosing what I wanted to study at university, at that point in time, dance was the natural choice for me. So I went to the University of Leeds, studied a degree in contemporary dance. During my third year, I started to study arts in the community or dance in the community. And what I realised was that I loved community. So this is 1999. I graduate with this degree. I thought I was old at 21. I was aching. I wanted a proper job. Those were my words. I didn't want to roll around on the floor anymore doing this contemporary dance. And I'd really enjoyed this community side of my work. The reason I mentioned the year 99 was that the Blair government had just come into power in the UK. They'd been in place for a couple of years. Tony Blair had done the biggest amount of public spending ever. So there were just all these community jobs popping up everywhere. Because I had this passion, this interest that I'd realised, because this was happening across society in the UK, I applied for a job as a community involvement officer in my local neighbourhood centre, a bit like a community centre, and it took it from there.
And of course, we know that there are many dance classes being held in community centres, probably as we speak at this time. So really, the link wasn't that tenuous.
It's actually not that tenuous when you think about it. The world that I work in now, though, you know, I'm working often with politicians, ministers, mayors, sometimes over some quite contentious issues. It does feel like a long way away from those days of kicking my legs around.
So you did this in the UK.
Yeah.
How long did you spend in community in the UK?
My career in the UK in the community was about a decade. I came back and forth to Australia on various holidays, working holiday visas, worked in a community development team in Western Sydney at Parramatta Council. Decided whilst I was in Australia that I loved Australia. I actually met my other half here. He's English as well. Both backpackers, met in Sydney. Spent a year here on our working holiday visas. And then when we went back to the UK, went back into community work in London, realised that we both loved Australia and we wanted to migrate permanently. And so I thought this was an interesting story to share with you because we actually looked at the occupations in demand for South Australia. Dan, my other half, he's a marketing manager, amazing skills. His occupations weren't in demand. Lo and behold, on the list of occupations was community worker. So
fabulous.
We actually came as a sponsored permanent resident to
and
South Australia.
And he became the gardener, cook, bottle washer and cleaner.
No, he's actually still a marketer. But yeah, he came as my de facto. So, you know, community worker skills are world sought after. Like you can apply them wherever you are in the world.
Now, there's a great tip.
Yeah.
So why to South Australia, not to Western Sydney to stay?
They were in demand here, community workers. So to come to South Australia back in, I think it was 2007, we could get permanent residency if we came to Adelaide versus if we wanted to go to Sydney, which I'll confess I did at first, we wouldn't have got
you
permanent
were young.
Residency.
That's why.
I was. And actually, I have no regrets. And we now love South Australia and it's our home and our base. And I now work with clients all over the world, but I love living in South Australia.
It's well, I'm a very passionate South Australian and my children live in Sydney and we have this ongoing debate. We send weather things. Like at the moment, I'm crowing, literally, sending across weather pictures from South Australia.
That's
so I'm
brilliant.
Pleased to hear that, Becky. Now, Becky, your love for community development morphed to community engagement. A lot of people think they're the same thing, but they're actually not.
Yeah, they're not. And, you know, I actually wrote about this in a chapter in my book, For the Love of Community Engagement. I talked about when I arrived in Australia, so this was 2007, most of my work had been in what we call community development. So very grassroots, in community centres, working on the ground with people directly. And I applied for a job in a council here in South Australia for a community engagement officer. And it was actually in the interview that I was speaking with the two directors of, I don't know, community services and something else. And they said to me, when I was giving all my examples, they said, Becky, the examples you're giving are sounding very community development. We're actually looking for community engagement. And I, of course, had to kind of fluff it in the interview. Oh, right. Anyway, turns out community engagement in the world of councils, state government, is very much about that sort of top-down engagement. It's about they are making a decision on something locally and they want to engage the community. They want to involve the community in something, the decision-making. So maybe it's that they're putting in a local playground. Maybe it's that they're updating their recycling processes. Maybe they're updating a policy on something and they want to get the community feedback on it. That's what they're calling community engagement. Community development, in my eyes, is much more of that grassroots, you know, place-based community development projects happening on the ground. So I got this job. I obviously managed to blag the interview enough to get the job. And that was the first piece of work I did in South Australia. Obviously, couldn't get rid of that community development love that I have for grassroots. And so still now, you know, 25 years into my career, I'm now kind of known as this community engagement expert. So my clients are all councils and state government, helping them engage with communities. But I'm coming at it with this absolute passion for people. Government isn't my passion. People and communities are my passion. So I've always been sort of seen as that, as a bit different in the community engagement sector.
And your background in community development, Becky, lies an absolute foundation when you are doing that community engagement, because you know community centres can be that hub where you can go and find people, find out what they think, how they feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mentioned my book, For the Love of Community Engagement. I've actually got a chapter in there called Nurture the Third Sector. I don't know if you use the expression third sector.
We do.
You do, yeah. So that's a term used a lot in the UK as well, or not-for-profit sector in the UK. And I talk specifically in an entire chapter about how the work I do in community engagement really ought to utilise the work of the third sector and use the third sector to connect us, because the third sector are working so closely and directly with the community that it just makes total sense for us to all work together.
Of course, and often community centres are forgotten because they've been there for years. People love what I call the dory fish syndrome, you know, shiny new things. But it's community centres where community feels comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's a place where you can gather people and get their feedback in a really, as you said, grassroots way.
Yeah.
So talk to us about your book. Writing a book is no mean feat. What made you decide to do it? How did it come about?
It just came over me. It was the beginning of the pandemic. Maybe there was something psychological going on there. I'd quit drinking alcohol. Maybe there was something psychological going there.
Don't you need alcohol to write a book? I thought that when you had writer's block, that's what you did.
I think I replaced red wine with writing. I like obsessively wrote over the summer of 2020 into 2021, and I published the book in April 2021. And it's split into 20 chapters. Each chapter's got a different sort of approach to community engagement and why I'm so different in my approach to that sort of top-down engagement being more bottom-up. So yeah, it's something I'm really proud of. It's been purchased around the world. It's available on Amazon, so you know people can buy it anywhere. And I'm getting really good feedback from it. So yeah, it was a big challenge, but it feels very satisfying to have those sort of first 20 years of my career summarised into these nice, neat 20 chapters.
Yes, and look, to write a book is such a kudos to you, because it's not an easy exercise, because people suffer from that inner critic. So well done you. Becky, community engagement is something that's changed over time, particularly because of social media and how people see that they can have a voice.
Yeah.
Like once you literally used to go face-to-face and then develop SurveyMonkey and it's all online and emails, and now it's social media. Is there a difference between how you get the feedback in terms of the quality?
Yeah, without a doubt. Although you can use online tools well, but we mustn't just slip into kind of old school practices just because they're online. So I tend to shy away a lot from surveys, because I'm all about trying to get conversation going amongst communities. That is more of a challenge these days, full stop, to provide those safe spaces, both face to face and particularly online, because people are quite vicious at times. And it is certainly a different world now to when I first started.
I think it's a little bit like when you have a conversation with somebody, you have warm up time.
Yeah.
You get to what it is you really want to talk about, and then at the end you can clarify.
Yeah.
But when it's social media, people just go straight for it. So there's been no pre-understanding. Where are they coming from? What's their background? How do they look? I mean, so much of our communication is nonverbal.
Yeah.
We miss so much with social media unless someone's doing a video.
Yeah.
But most of the time it's only words, and with email and a survey.
Yeah, and I'll often advise clients, you know, don't just use a Facebook post, because people will give you that front of mind, three words of what they think. What we actually want to do is get to that deeper understanding, that deeper knowledge. knowledge. I'm actually sort of smiling as you're saying that about that, that sort of the contact, the warm up. My friend and mentor, Wendy Sarkissian, she's based in Vancouver and she's just turned 81. She's a seasoned Fabulous. Engagement practitioner. Yeah, you know, she's like 6 decades worth of experience. And she just talked the other day on a panel discussion we had around mental health in community engagement. She reminded us all that we are, in fact, all animals and that it is actually important for us to all kind of see each other, smell each other. She says, you know, her partner, her former partner, he could smell the atmosphere in the room because we're animals. You know, we're not vegetables or minerals. We're animals.
You can certainly feel it, but you can't on a social media post.
You can't, no.
One of the words I really dislike more than any other is when someone does a post and the first thing to do is go, does this sound good? It's not about if it sounds good. It's about if it's what you want to say. Should I change that word? Does this sound clever? Do I sound funny?
Yeah.
That's not what you want. There's no authenticity in that.
Yeah, I think authenticity is probably the word there. And people are really starting to realise that the more authentic you can be, the better.
And this is where AI is going to be interesting because we'll all be able to spot the AI comment.
I can spot it already. Mm. Can you spot it? Mm. I can spot it.
Sounds like the robot's taken over.
Yeah, you can spot. I'm a big fan of AI. In fact, I've just used it with a community in Wyala. We did a big visioning exercise and then we popped it all into AI and ChatGPT. I call her Vivian. That's my assistant because I think it's polite to give her a name. Treat her with a bit of respect because you never know when the robots are coming to take over.
Absolutely.
And it was actually amazing. It wrote us a beautiful couple of paragraphs and the community were just like, wow, that would have taken us weeks to come up with that. But you can certainly spot it when you see it on social media now.
Well, people I've done some AI interviews and the key thing is that AI can take all that research time away.
Yeah.
It can also take what's just been conversation and order it. It can prioritise. Yep. So it's saving time just like the machines did with the Industrial Revolution. That's exactly how we need to think of it.
Yep.
But there still needs the human input to say, what do we do with it? How do we interpret it? How do we make it sound like someone will want to read it? And I guess the best example, you talk about visioning, when someone sits there and they come up with this motherhood statement that no one really resonates with. So at the end of the day, what we want to say is we help people. Yep, that's about it. That's what we want to say. But AI saying that would go into several words. It's a tool. That's what it is.
I completely agree. I think it's a tool to start you off in a process. And I think see what it spits out at you and use that as a starting point, but then personalise it because, my partner and I have talked about it a lot because he's in digital marketing and you can see the words that those people wouldn't normally use.
Well, I think it's the dating sites where I'm not on them, by the way. I have a partner. No problem if you are. But just make sure you humanise it because everyone's using the same pool of information here.
It's the robots,
which is really disturbing. So we'll move from that. Now, the future for community engagement, Becky, because we're talking now about changes. Where do you see it?
Look, we're in a really interesting point in time just globally. I think we're at a real point of distrust in communities, certainly in the world of community engagement. I just listened to the podcast you've released today, actually, as we're recording this about cost of living. You know, there's a lot of pressures on people at the moment, and that's really starting to show up in communities that people are much more angry at each other. We're not necessarily listening to each other. We're really just, I guess, in that animal survival mode almost. So we've got this kind of stress and this added pressure on communities. We've got more and more polarization happening in communities where you've got different sides, people can't join in the middle. So I really think if ever there's a time to be in community engagement, this is the toughest time, but it's the time that it's most important because we need to teach people to listen again to each other and to reconnect and to smell each other's energy and actually, you know, listen to each other and try and understand each other.
It's a great point, Becky. And I think as well, when we look at some of the issues that we're dealing with today, let's take homelessness.
Yep.
So government decides to get land and build housing tenements, which are 20 stories high because they feel that's what's going to resolve it.
Yeah.
Now, you're going to need to do community engagement.
Yeah.
And the thing with community engagement, it's all about cause and consequence, is that when someone comes up with a plan, they own that pretty strongly. They don't want anybody to give any objections to that plan. But there is always that compromise. But you need to really soundly think about the 360-degree impact of that, that cause and consequence. And often we don't. That only comes through exploring conversations. It might not come out for ages.
Yeah. And as soon as you mention, you know, tackling a housing crisis or homelessness, I straight away go to who needs to be involved. And that's the people experiencing homelessness, because they're going to be the people who tell you the truth about what's going to work and what's not going
to
work.
And you're also going to have to speak to the neighbours and speak to the local communities and businesses and see what they've got to say about it, because otherwise there's resentment right from the bat.
Exactly.
And often there's ways around it. If only people will have a conversation, which is really what engagement is all about.
Yep.
But people almost come like warring sides, don't they?
Yeah.
And do you think this is because a lot of the work must go back to the human elements that we have?
Yep.
Is that people have to be right
Yes.
They have to. Otherwise, you're saying I'm wrong if you disagree with it. And that's not what it's about. Can you unpack that for me?
Without a doubt. And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about this kind of polarized society. And I think we're seeing it from the top. We're seeing a global level from our political leaders. You know, we only have to switch on the news and you see people saying, I think this. We really have lost
you
that.
You should.
Yeah, you should. This will work.
Like, trust me.
No. It's typically those kind of what are seen as the masculine attributes of leadership, actually. And what we really need to be trying to pull on a bit more in society is those feminine attributes of leadership, which even many women don't have because we've had
because they've tried to be men.
Yeah. So we really
thinking
need,
that's what they need to
yeah,
do.
Yeah. So we yes. really, you know, a lot of those attributes of leadership that are connected more to a feminine side are about collaboration, listening, understanding, empathy, trying to, you know, work together, nurture each other.
Hear from the other side. And in fact, that thing about standing in the other person's shoes and say, yeah. Will you live what I'm going to live if this goes ahead? How would you feel?
Exactly.
Particularly when you're talking about bureaucracy, not understanding what it's like, that path that's going to have to be walked.
Yeah. I worked with a council recently on a very contentious issue, and the people just could not stand in each other's shoes. It was not possible. They were so stuck in their view that it just makes it so hard to work on. So, you know, as community engagement practitioners, and I'd imagine in community centres as well, you know, all of us have actually got to look after our mental health in this as well, because the world is in a funny place. And, you know, I don't know, I hope, I kind of predict we're going to go into these more hyper communities, sort of micro communities that are smaller, more local based. You know, I hope people are going to become more connected in their neighbourhoods. I hope that's going to be a result of kind of where we're at a global scale at the moment. I think it's a potential solution.
And you've raised a really good point, Becky, about mental health. Do you think that before we undertake community engagement, that we're going to need to set mental health ground rules and get people to have a self-awareness? If you feel yourself becoming angry, if you're feeling, then you need to stop, give them some tools, whereas that's not normally. It's just free-for-all, way we go. But if we don't give people those mental health tools for themselves and for how they treat others, I think we're going to have a lot of issues. What's your thoughts?
Oh, completely. How you treat each other's, how you treat the facilitator in the room. I mean, that's where we're often coming from as professionals working in the community space. We're the ones having to bring people together and have conversations.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah. And really, you know, I am a human. And you hear it a lot, you know, these days. I was on Qantas the other day and I heard, you know, the overhead announcement saying, please treat our staff with respect. You know, they're doing the job. They're doing the best they can. And, you know, as community workers, we're doing the same. We're just trying the best we can. We really believe in community and we really want it. So it hurts when it's not working, you know, and that's where the title of my book came from. You know, it's really about love and passion. We do this because we love it, not because it's just a job.
And if you come from heart center and with good intent, I love that saying, when you have the opportunity to be right or to be kind, always choose kind.
Exactly. And that's a feminine attribute of leadership, I would say. You don't have to be right, just be
certainly
kind. It's a good one.
So in shaping community centres for the future, and a lot of them are our members, what would you be saying to a community centre about community engagement? And they're all doing community needs analysis. What should they be looking for?
I mean, I would be really seeing yourselves as valuable, you know, an incredible, valuable asset in a community. You can be that centre point, if you like, for... When I'm working with councils and state government, you know, they should be coming to community centres and working with them together, using them to kind of reach out to your members. I would be really proud that you have that direct connection to the real people that live in your neighbourhoods, and that people come to you as a source of services or source of support, that you are that. And I think really hold that proud. You can represent your local communities. And I guess, you know, listen to your local communities, as I know you do. I'm preaching to the converted here. I think just know
we're
that
we're trying
that's
to get
really
the podcast
valuable.
Out there, though, Becky. So it's good to keep reinforcing that message that community centres are not just where old people play bingo.
Yeah, and they're not just fluffy. You know, I keep saying, I've got as my bio now, you know, people say community engagement or development is soft and fluffy. And I actually say, no, I've got the hard skills. I've got the hard skills that so many business leaders, political leaders, leaders in general don't have.
Delivering a product and a service is the easy part. It's getting the people to do it and manage that process. It's the harder part, isn't it?
Exactly. And for any big project, you know, if you're looking at building a new road, building a new bridge, and you're wanting to engage the community, it's going to be the community. It's the people who's going to derail it. It's not going to be anything else.
True. Now, Becky, you know that the sector loves stories. What's some stories that come to mind of community engagement? Good, bad, ugly?
I've got hundreds. What do you want?
Pick some for me.
Why don't I tell you one of my favourite. I'll tell you a favourite community. I wonder if is there a community centre in Roxby Downs?
There is.
I reckon there is, isn't there? That's one of my favourite communities to go to. I've done a couple of pieces of work up there and I love it because it is, for me, the absolute definition of a place community because the boundary is so clear. I love going there because in my days where I did a bit of running.
Yeah, they can't escape.
I get it. Yeah, I get up in the morning and you do a full circumference of the town with the desert to your right or left and the town on the other side. And I love it. And I love that you can see the mine in the distance, you know, and that it's just this whole purpose for being. And then that community itself has just got such a warm, welcoming vibe about it and a young demographic. You know, it's really fascinating. Another one I've been working in recently is Whyalla and Murray Bridge, actually. I know you interviewed someone from Murray Bridge. Like, these regional communities are just so warm and welcoming.
And they're growing in tourism. Murray Bridge, I was an interview with the International Dark Reserve there, which has now been listed officially.
Yes.
Monarto Zoo's growing.
Incredible. Monarto, more than just Monarto Zoo, though, you know. I met the people of Monarto recently and they're so passionate and so involved in their community. And yeah, so any community that I go to, I just love. And every community has a quirk. And I've discovered recently, I'm a bit of an op shopper. And I've discovered recently that you can tell a lot about a community or it raises questions when you go to the local op shop. There's an interesting one for all your listeners.
Op shops.
Whyalla, I go to the op shops there. Just, you know, whilst I'm on this work trip, I'll pop into the local Vinnies. And there's all these sort of like designer labels. And I'm fascinated by this because none of those stores are actually in the town. So you start to learn that people are actually buying online or is there like a circulation of stuff in optional? Anyway, that's where my mind goes. I really go into the sort of nooks and crannies of communities when I'm in them.
Jins. I always think with op shops, particularly with clothing, if only it had a label that said, now this is my life. This is whose back I've been on. If you'd stand there reading all of this, trying to work it out, would be a great story.
Yeah. So yeah, so many stories. I've got horrible stories as well. You know, I've had you know, contentious issues where we've had security guards, you know, armed guards, where we've had undercover cops in the room who stand out like a sore thumb. You know, you've got these people, these two huge guys with their sunnies on their
head. Have you had physical violence?
No. Actually, no, I did have somebody punch somebody years ago. That was a long time ago, though, and I've put it out. And in fact, I've been talking a lot recently around mental health and how I've been in a couple of shouty spaces just in my own community over the last year, and that really shook me. It's a horrible feeling when it gets violent.
Tribal, if they get numbers, yeah. That's really hard because then you get group think, group behaviour.
Exactly. The tribal stuff is scary. Yeah. And unfortunately, that is a sort of place we're at the moment. I guess we always have been. But
do you think social media has driven that, where people go to find their tribe and they can easily gather them?
I think social media has enabled it. You can activate a movement, good and bad, quicker these days with social media. I'm a massive social media user and I easily activate movements. It's one of my special skills just because I'm so passionate about people and community that if ever there's an issue, I will activate and I'll use social media. I like to think for good. Obviously, it can be used in all sorts of ways. So yeah, I think probably this kind of activity in communities has always been there. There would be hundreds of examples, thousands of examples over decades. But yeah, social media has definitely made it easier, I think.
Well, I've been talking today to Becky Hurst from Becky Hurst Consulting. It's been a fabulous conversation. I'm sorry it needs to end, but no doubt we'll talk again soon. Thank you for being so generous with your time today and sharing.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. These podcasts bring you stories from across the state of South Australia. All of the great work being done in our communities and general topics of community interest. Feel free to share these podcasts with your networks and send us any feedback to info@communitycentressa.asn.au.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.